John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, service at the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for August 11th to 17th, 2012. Attacks against Palestinian family and three youth in Jerusalem reach an alarming level. Meanwhile, Israeli threats to attack Iran continue despite warnings from some Israeli military and political leaders. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with non-violent activities in the West Bank. This week, Israeli soldiers' attacks on anti-wall protesters across the West Bank left scores of civilians injured from tear gas inhalation. IMEMC's Iman Badjali has more.
Anti-wall protests this Friday were organized at the villages of Bil'in, Na'lin and An-Nabi Saleh in central West Bank, as well as the southern West Bank village of Al-Masara. In central West Bank, troops used tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets against Bil'in, Na'lin and An-Nabi Saleh residents and their international and Israeli supporters. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation at the three locations. Soldiers attacked Al-Nabi Saleh protests before it even left the village to get to the location of the wall. Meanwhile, in Bil'in and Na'lin, residents and their international supporters managed to reach the gate of the wall, separating local farmers from their lands. Elsewhere, on Friday, in southern West Bank, Al-Masara villagers organized their weekly anti-wall protest. Israeli forces stationed their forced people back into the village using the rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Iman Badjali.
As Israeli threats to attack Iran continue, the Iranian president describes Israel as an insult to humanity. Meanwhile, tension between Israel and Egypt surfaces following the Rafah deadly attack. The details with IMEMC's Anne Shirley.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he supports a military strike against Iran regardless of the fact that Israel will not be able to destroy the Iranian nuclear plant. Israeli newspaper, the Jerusalem Post, said on its online edition that Netanyahu believes that following a military hit to Iran, the nuclear program will need some years of renovation, during which the regime may change in the Islamic Republic. Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Ehud Barak are among few Israeli leaders who strongly support a military offensive against Iran. Recently, Amnon Lipkin-Shahak, former chief of staff of the Israeli army, joined the camp opposing a military hit against Iran. On his part, Israeli President Shimon Peres said Israel is incapable of carrying out an attack on Iran alone, saying that a strike must be coordinated with the United States. In the meantime, the Iranian president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad referred to Israel as a Western tool to dominate the Middle East and an insult to all humanity. His comments came during a speech given at a Tehran rally marking the annual Jerusalem Day, which coincides with every last Friday of Ramadan in Iran. In other news, Egyptian-Israeli relations remain in tension following the latest deadly attack on the Egyptian military base in the Sinai Desert 2 weeks ago, which claimed the lives of 15 Egyptian soldiers. As Egypt launched a military operation against armed groups in the Sinai in response to the attack, Israel demanded Egypt to withdraw its heavy military forces from the Sinai Peninsula in accordance with the Camp David Agreement signed between Israel and Egypt in 1978. The agreement allows a limited number of Egyptian military forces in some areas of the Sinai and allows Israel to pursue direct threats up to 10 kilometers into the Sinai. Following the Egyptian revolution, several Egyptian leaders voiced demands that the Camp David agreement must be amended to allow more Egyptian forces in the Sinai. For IMEMC News, this is Anne Shirley.
This week, the Israeli military conducted at least 7 military incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank. During those attacks, soldiers arrested 7 Palestinian civilians, including a child. Moreover, attacks on Palestinian civilians reach an alarming level this week. IMEMC's Vika Awad with the details.
In a recent development, dozens of Jewish youth attacked 3 young Palestinians in Jerusalem early on Friday morning, in what one witness described as a lynch. One of the victims was beaten until he passed out and is currently in Hadassah Hospital in serious condition. An eyewitness said on her Facebook wall that she was witnessed a lynch in Jerusalem. She added the Assyrians shouted death to Arabs and other anti-Arab slogans when they attacked the 3 youths who were walking peacefully in Beh Yehuda Street in Jerusalem. The witness also wrote that some of the Israeli were not happy that paramedics were giving aid to the wounded and performed CPR until he was transferred to the hospital because, as they said, he is an Arab. In related news, Palestinian medical sources in Bethlehem reported Thursday that a cab driver, a Palestinian father, mother and their children suffered moderate to severe injuries after fundamentalist Israeli settlers herded a firebomb at the Palestinian cab. The attack took place when the Palestinian taxi was driving near the illegal Bet Ayin and Govad illegal settlements, close to the Etzion settlement block, south of the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem. Earlier in the week, on Wednesday, a group of extremist Israeli settlers used electric pumps to empty a Palestinian irrigation well and flooded Palestinian farmlands in As-Sir area, east of Sair town, near the southern West Bank city of Hebron. In the Gaza Strip this week, Israeli tanks invaded parts of the border area of Rafah town and opened fire at the nearby residents' homes while army bulldozers destroyed local farmers' land. Earlier in the week, a Palestinian civilian was wounded on Saturday when Israeli troops positioned at the border between the Gaza Strip and Israel to the east of Khan Yunis town. Also this week, the Israeli Navy continued to fire at Palestinian fishing boats off the Gaza Strip shores. This week, 2 such attacks were documented by Palestinian human rights groups. Damage was reported, but no injuries. For IMMC News, this is Vika Awad.
That was just some of the news from This Week in Palestine. This was the weekly report from August 11th to the 17th, 2011, from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, George Rishmaoui.
Thursday night, 16th of August, a U.S. Black Hawk helicopter crashed or was shot down in Kandahar, killing 7 American troops, 3 Afghan soldiers, and 1 Afghan interpreter. The Taliban says they shot the helicopter down, killing the total of 11 people on board. Of the 7 American troops, 3 were under Special Operations Command and were SEALs, according to some reports. Afghanistan, Friday, the 17th of August. NATO is reporting the deaths of 2 American soldiers from small arms fire when an Afghan police officer attacked the soldiers in Farah province. This is at least the 6th such attack in barely over a week. Afghanistan, 16th of August. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 15th of August. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 15th of August. The Taliban fired mortars into Bagram Air Base during the night. U.S. forces claim the shells did not inflict significant damage. On the other hand, such attacks are often meant only to disrupt opposing forces' sleep and recovery, wearing them down as part of the classic insurgent strategy. It takes only seconds to set up a mortar, drop in a couple shells, pack up the mortar, and hightail it. Afghanistan, 15th of August. The Taliban attacked a U.S. base at Khost, few details available. Pakistan, 16th of August. Insurgents wearing uniforms of the Pakistani military stormed the Minas Air Force Base using automatic weapons and rocket-propelled grenades. This is a major facility housing the manufacturing plants for the Pakistani Air Force. 9 insurgents and 1 military official were killed in the attack. The Pakistani government claims no nuclear weapons were stored there. Pakistan, 16th of August. The Taliban ambushed 3 buses, boarded them, and shot 22 people just because their identity cards revealed that they were Shiites. This is a sort of ugly sectarian warfare usually associated with Iraq. Iraq, 16th of August. A wave of bombings and shootings killed at least 48 people. A car bomb in Baghdad killed 7 people in a Shiite neighborhood. Another car bomb near a security forces headquarters in Dakuk attracted police, then a roadside bomb killed 7 of them. A suicide bombing in a tea shop in Tal Afar killed 7 people. 7 Iraqi soldiers were shot and killed at a checkpoint near Mashhada. Another car bomb in Kut killed 7 more people. There were 5 bombings in Kirkuk, bombs in Sadr City and Baghdad, Bakuba and elsewhere, in the bloodiest day in Iraq in at least 3 weeks. Mr. Barack Obama, Iraq is no role model for Afghanistan. U.S. troops were unable to stabilize Iraq and cannot stabilize Afghanistan either. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
What on earth is the British Empire smoking? On the 15th of August, Britain's Foreign Office threatened to storm the embassy of Ecuador to arrest WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. This would be an act of war against Ecuador, and Ecuador would have the right to defend the embassy by armed force. Most embassies do have weapons on hand to defend against being stormed by terrorists. As this was announced,
The police presence outside the embassy of Ecuador in London was considerably reinforced. The government of Ecuador said such an assault would be treated as a hostile and intolerable act. This is diplo-speak for calling it an act of war. Ecuadorian Foreign Minister Ricardo Patina reported that this was a written threat and went on to remind the world that Ecuador is not a British colony.
Today, we have received an express written threat from the United Kingdom that they could assault our embassy in London if we do not hand over Julian Assange. We want to leave it absolutely clear that we are not a British colony and that the age of colonialism is over. The last thing I want to say to you is that the Ecuadorian government has taken a decision with respect to Julian Assange's diplomatic asylum. We will announce it tomorrow at 7 a.m.
The next day, the 16th of August, Ecuador called the British Empire under ugly threat by announcing that they have granted asylum to Julian Assange, who has been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy to avoid extradition to Sweden on trumped-up charges, which would be followed by extradition to the United States. There, he would risk being sent to Guantanamo Bay. Someone in London decided to think with their testicles instead of their brain, and thanks to their stupidity, Julian Assange should soon be free of worries about American torture and imprisonment in retaliation for things like the collateral murder video of journalists being machine-gunned by a U.S. helicopter in Iraq.
Light them all up.
Through traffic, 260s.
Come on, fire!
Hey, Roger.
Keep shoot. Keep shoot.
Bushmaster 2-6. We need to move time now.
All right, we just engaged all eight individuals.
You know, we got two birds. We're still firing.
Roger. Got him.
6 is a 2-6. We're moving. We got 30.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was done.
That's right, Britain. Ecuador is not a British colony. And just because you Brits are white does not mean you get to push around people from Central America. A military assault on anyone's embassy is a violation of the Geneva Conventions and centuries of settled international law. Ecuador has done the right thing. They're standing up to bullying from the British Empire and calling their threat, knowing that bullies like to bluff. I don't know what the British Foreign Office is smoking, but I do not want to hit on it, and I hope to God it goes out real soon. Otherwise, if British troops can storm the embassy of Ecuador, why can't anti-war protesters, or for that matter, Ecuadorian troops, storm British embassies?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com.
Last week, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly unveiled a new data collection and analysis system they call the Domain Awareness System. It combines a network of public and private surveillance cameras, automatic license plate readers, 911 calls, and police databases, allowing police to track the movements through time and space of individuals in minute detail. Developed by the NYPD and Microsoft, the Domain Awareness System is being called a crime-fighting tool, but in fact it doesn't track crime or criminals, it tracks everything and everybody. Civil rights advocates say the implications of massive surveillance like this for our privacy rights are profound, but the legal system has not yet caught up with the technology. To fight back against pervasive surveillance of innocent citizens, the Washington, D.C.-based Partnership for Civil Justice Fund has launched a new interactive website, BigBrotherAmerica.org, to watch the watchers. Carl Massinio, legal director of the partnership, says the Domain Awareness System is much more than a simple crime-fighting database.
It's a surveillance grid that is being put up throughout New York City and plans to export it across the country, where feeds are brought in from private corporations and government that will monitor the movement and the activity of all persons, law-abiding persons, without any suspicion that people were engaged in any type of misconduct. And it provides basically a massive data warehouse and data mining program. While it's being presented as a law enforcement tool, there will be authorized access to data by what they call private stakeholders, to include the Bank of New York, Brookstone, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, many, many large financial institutions, as well as other corporations.
Now, this is a feature that has been noted before, that in the surveillance centers of the NYPD, there are actually booths that have plaques for the various corporations on them. What business does business have being part of a police surveillance system?
We would say they have no business. I mean, even the government is far exceeding what should be permitted to it in terms of its intrusiveness. This is the modern-day manifestation of the military-industrial complex, and it's intruding upon us in the most intimate and personal ways. And what is happening as a consequence of this is that these businesses, those that are granted access, and certainly the government, are going to be able to have access to all information about our activities, our conduct, our associations, and when that's cross-referenced and aggregated with other digitized transaction information, such as credit card information or cell phone GPS tracking data, with only a few keystrokes, they are able to get a complete profile on what we have done as law-abiding persons, so far in intrusiveness that they can even create a personality profile. Imagine, were you parked outside of a health clinic? They know. Were you parked outside of a lover's apartment? They know. Who was in the vicinity of a social justice or political organizing meeting? They will know that. If you go to an AA meeting, that's there. And the data retention, I mean, the limits are just so loose, it's absurd. I mean, the standard limits for license plate, which is movement tracking data, is 5 years retention. And that, of course, can be expanded. So what we are talking about is not just domain awareness, but total information awareness.
There have been court rulings on things like placing GPS trackers on cars. You have to have a search warrant in order to do that. Are there any judicial opinions on the random or mass collection of data and its use in criminal investigations without warrants or suspicion?
That's a very good question, an important area of legal development. And historically, constitutional law has lagged far behind advances in technology. At this point, there are specific opinions. For example, going onto someone's curtilage or going onto their driveway to put a GPS tracker on someone's car is an intrusion of privacy. But that's in part because the police have to physically trespass to do that. Right now, there's a big gray area as to mass surveillance technologies. And there is a recognition by some courts, only some, that the aggregation of little pieces of data over a long period of time creates such a complete profile of a person and his or her activities and associations that it truly becomes intrusive, even though there's no physical contact involved. And this is part of what the development of the law has got to recognize. These are not physically intrusive means. And a lot of the issues of expectation of privacy and privacy law have been focused on, well, is it intrusive to the person? Does it hurt the person? And is that justifiable? Here, this technology happens surreptitiously, painlessly, but yet is as intrusive as going and listening and tape recording to a person's therapist sessions.
Another odd aspect of this is that the city of New York is marketing this. The city stands to make a 30% cut of any profits that Microsoft makes on selling this software to other administrations within the United States or even internationally. This is making surveillance a going business concern for a municipality. This is Big Brother going commercial.
Well, Exactly. And by introducing the profit motive, it makes it absolutely clear that there will be a proliferation of this technology unless people intervene and use social activism, law, and legislation to take control of this technology. The profit motivation is to utilize this, to sell it to governments, to sell it to corporations, and to make money off of it. And what's at stake for us is truly our way of life and our political freedom. Technology is always going to advance. Of course, that's a great social value. But how we use and how we restrict technology is a political decision. And right now it's time for us to take charge before the corporations make this a fait accompli.
The Partnership for Civil Justice has launched BigBrotherAmerica.org, One Nation Under Surveillance. How does this allow people to participate in fighting back?
It provides two functions. One is a clearinghouse function. We are an interactive website where people are able to report and submit to the website for dissemination widely examples of the deployment of these technologies in localities across the country. So that, for example, use of license plate reader technology, people are able to submit through the website to us, and we've got an interactive map that is plotting graphically the proliferation of this technology across the country. People can also send in the photos, locations of tag readers. They can download posters for the One Nation Under Surveillance campaign. They can get resources and information about ways that they can challenge the local municipal rollout of these technologies. Because the fact is, locally, we have the ability to use our city councils, our state legislatures, as well as the Congress, to both demand oversight hearings and also to demand restrictions. That is, simply to say that before mass surveillance technology be implemented, be executed, that there be a privacy impact assessment that is conducted, that there be an informed and public debate about what fields of data are being collected on our everyday activities and who has access and what the restrictions are, and let us determine what is the proper scope. And there needs to be severe penalties on misuse of data.
Carl Massinio is legal director of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund based in Washington, D.C. Again, the website for tracking the nationwide system of surveillance is bigbrotheramerica.org.
On the West Coast, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces and heavily armed SWAT cops raided a Seattle home on the 10th of July looking for anarchist literature and have served several grand jury subpoenas as part of a fishing expedition into anarchists on the West Coast. Communiques from anarchists have compared this investigation to the Inquisition and its witchcraft trials. In the first week of August, there was a wave of punitive attacks on courthouses and police facilities around the nation, striking back at those responsible for grand juries and their subpoenas. Here is a list of some of the punitive strikes. Seattle, 2nd of August. A large group of protesters gathered at the courthouse to support those threatened by the grand jury subpoenas. Seattle, 3rd of August. Anarchist fighters smashed the windows and battered down the doors at a Seattle municipal courthouse. Anarchist literature was left inside, since they seemed to be so interested in investigating anarchists. August 2nd, Milwaukee. Anarchist fighters smashed three police cars in an arrest wagon, and signs at a pizza shop were changed to read, "Suicide Our Cops," a reference to a former hardcore band. The next day, the Obama campaign headquarters had its windows smashed as well. San Francisco, 2nd of August. Anarchists slashed police car tires and etched the windows with acid. Madison County, Illinois, 3rd of August. Anarchists spray-painted graffiti on the courthouse door. Atlanta, Georgia, 5th and 6th of August. Anarchist fighters used hammers and industrial glue to destroy every parking meter on Edgewood Avenue in the old 4th Ward neighborhood of Atlanta for a total of 45 dead parking meters. On a nearby wall visible from the meters, they added painted graffiti condemning the grand jury and the six subpoenas that are part of the fishing expedition against anarchists. The next day, a banner condemning grand juries was dropped over Freedom Parkway. Asheville, North Carolina, 2nd of August. Protesters held a noisy protest within earshot of inmates at the jail after protesting at the site of a new, larger jail under construction. In addition, here is part of a statement released by two people who are refusing to cooperate with the grand jury. Quote, "Hi, my name is Dennison. I will be reading a statement on behalf of Dennison Williams and Leland Plant. The two of us were subpoenaed to the secret grand jury to begin meeting on Thursday investigating anarchists. We are releasing this statement to make clear our intention to resist the grand jury. We will not cooperate with their investigation. If we appear before the grand jury, we will not answer any questions other than our names. If we are asked additional questions, we will invoke our First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights. Under no circumstances will we talk about other people. Hey, FBI and grand juries, don't think you can stop anarchists with house raids and repression. These tools make people angry and lead to retaliation. When protest is outlawed, only outlaws can protest, and you don't want to go there.
Long nights, blood and fire.